The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon.
Well, good afternoon to you, too.
This is Aaron Ryan.
And Bill Cundiff.
And Bob Martin.
Welcome, Bob.
Cue Bob. I kind of turned my sound down. Who was using this thing?
I don't think it's you. I think it's...
It's probably me.
I meant to warn you. I think something has gone out on mic 3 there. I probably need to switch you to mic 4.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Okay, listen, we're going to do a little online switch here.
Just because it, for some reason...
It hates us.
You
just say it.
And whoever is on it just sound really overdriven. So
interesting.
Don't know what's going on with that.
I'm on mic 4 now, but I don't hear me.
Well, today, fellas in engineering land. All right, so today we're looking at the inside world of whistleblowers. We're going to take two different looks at it. Both Ryan and Kristen are from Philadelphia. Well, they live in Philadelphia now. I shouldn't say they're from there. I don't know that that's true. And we've had them on. We've had Kristen on before, and Ryan has also been a whistleblower in previous hearings with the Veterans Administration. So, for those folks that are going, oh no, are they doing the Veterans Administration again? You should be excited about this because this is all the news that you won't get. Because they're busy covering Baltimore or whatever. That's what preempted the hearing a couple weeks ago, was the Baltimore deal. And how much Baltimore can you see? You know what I mean? You've seen one riot. You've seen them all, I think.
Yeah, really.
Enough with the riots already. So,
it's those damn police out of control.
Well,
all the
exactly.
Time. Somebody got to get a handle on that.
Yeah.
Holy mackerel.
You should be able to, what was it? You should be able to... go steal. You have an area where you can go steal things when you get upset.
Oh, yeah. There's an area set up for those who wish to destroy.
There you go.
Yeah.
I wonder where that is in our town. We should try that out. So anyway, we're going to look with Kristen today. We're looking at the kind of the legal side of being a whistleblower, because that's a lot of times the problem. People don't speak up because they're afraid to, and they don't know really how to do it and protect themselves.
Well, because you hear a lot of stories of people that are whistleblowers, and then all of a sudden they're not employed anymore.
Well, that's mostly how it goes.
Yeah.
It's like 95% of the time.
So, I mean, they're supposed to be protected.
But in Philadelphia, they've managed to be really successful with this, thanks to Kristen's foresight in going to law school, which was good planning on her part for working at the VA. Little did she know.
Yeah. Unfortunately, most people can't go to law school before they get their first job or whatever.
But they should have.
Yeah.
So good afternoon, Kristen. How you doing?
Great. Happy Mother's Day, everybody.
I was just going to say the same to you. Kind of a nice day to be chatting. It's kind of quiet out there. So when you first went to work at the VA, did you have any idea that you were going to be in all this hot water? I mean, how long did it take? I don't think we asked you that last time.
Well, when I went to employee orientation, which was probably like the first and second day I was there, I started seeing things that were strange. Like when we came in, they told us, you know, we'd be a certain grade level every single year. And the day that we got there, they said, by the way, there's a mistake on this paper. You'll need to complete this other grade level before you move to GS-11. And everybody in the class looked around and they're like, are they allowed to do this? And I remember I went and asked about it and I said, I don't think this is legal. You gave us an agreement and this was the deal to take this job. And they said, I wouldn't complain about it. You're in your first year. It's your probationary year. And everybody knew, you know, just to be quiet. So to me, that was strange because I'm like, this is a legal agreement, you know, and it, you know, I moved here and took this job and was expecting this grade increase from a 7 to a 9 to 11. And they say, oh, you have to do a GS-10 first. And then when you get to working there and you talk to other people, they'll say, oh, they did that to us too. So then you learn that it's not a mistake. I guess it's part of the plan.
Standard procedure.
I started instantly always bringing up issues, but it wasn't until 2010 with the duplicate payments that I really got into it.
So a bait and switch was your first clue.
Yeah, I know. I should have, but I had just moved here from Maryland, so I said, oh, geez, I guess I better be quiet.
Yeah, when in Rome, you know.
Yeah, better blend in. So, So for the people that are trying to figure out how to do this, you know, how to deal with being a whistleblower. Maybe they work not for the VA. Maybe they're with, you know, whatever, IRS or Social Security or some other federal agency. What's the actual procedure they're supposed to do, or that would be the, what would you advocate that they do based on experience?
I would collect evidence first before saying anything, because once you say something, once you whistleblow, depending on who you do it to, usually you're found out pretty quickly. You can whistleblow. First, you have to, if you don't report things to certain people, it's not considered whistleblowing. So you have to do it to the VA secretary or the media or Congress. So if you report something to your supervisor or the manager of your department, that doesn't count. That's not considered whistleblowing. So once you do something like that and follow chain of command, then they're on to you that you know something that they're doing wrong. So what you want to do first is collect all of your evidence, because they won't really take you seriously. If you are a whistleblower, you want to report things to the Office of Special Counsel, but without a lot of evidence, they'll just dismiss your case.
And how is the Office of Special Counsel? I know some of the Oakland folks finally went to them. Are they helpful? I mean, because the Inspector General, let's not leave them out. They can receive evidence. So if you have things that are private, you know, private information of people, Social Security numbers, medical information, a lot of the record keeping you're going to have as evidence is going to have, you know, material you can't take out of the building. You can't just fax to a lawyer. You're kind of stuck. You have to send it to the right place.
Yeah, and I think the Office of Special Counsel, they have very limited jurisdiction. It has to be, if you whistleblow, then for them to protect you, the agency has to have engaged in a personnel action against you, which the little trivial things that they do all day, like following you around the office and messing with your point standards, those aren't really personnel actions. So the Office of Special Counsel, they might tell you, yeah, we're not denying that these occurrences happened, but it's not retaliatory because it doesn't rise to the level of personnel action. So very few people get their case accepted by them.
So,
and
so
just
because it counts as retaliation out here in the free world,
doesn't count like that in the government.
It's not like that, huh? Interesting.
Yeah, so it's, you know, it's been a learning process for me, because I would, when things would happen, I'd report them right away, and then I learned the second you report something, they're on to you, and they're watching you like a hawk, and they're going to make it harder for you to report things. So you have to collect your stuff that you want to report first before you say anything.
Well, don't they also, once you've made those moves, don't they put you on, like, different tasks where they can watch you a little closer and don't get you involved in things that are potentially dangerous to them?
Yeah, I noticed certain things that I reported. They'd have meetings about it, and I wasn't, lately we haven't been included, Ryan and I. So I feel like if you're involved in something, they don't want you to know what's going on. They want to say that they fixed it, and they want usually people involved in those things that don't necessarily know all about the problem, because then they won't probably report things. So it's interesting how things happen. Or they might change your supervisor. I noticed one of the managers was following me around on break. Like, once you tell on them, they make it difficult for you. They'll give you random desk audits where they're allowed to give you a desk audit. But, you know, once
what
you're
is, what does that mean?
Things,
yeah, what is that?
What is a desk audit?
They're supposed to be going around checking for PII, misplaced PII, which would mean, you know, if you had someone's Social Security number in one of your file drawers, you're not allowed to have any information about a veteran or a claimant locked in any drawers or in any cabinets. It has to be out and visible on your desk. So that's the reason that they say they do the desk searches.
So if you have a list of claims you're keeping track of, you can keep a list in your computer, but you couldn't write it down, for instance.
Yeah, but sometimes you're, I mean, this is my third computer I've had since I've worked here, so sometimes your computer will just stop working. And, you know, you don't know why that happens, but sometimes that's not even safe. So for me, I funnel stuff. When I want to report something, I send it to the Inspector General immediately, so that even if something goes wrong, at least they have it.
Sure. And then later, have you found that stuff was there? Because I know there were people in Oakland, they turned things over to the Inspector General, and then it just kind of went away.
Yeah, usually what I'll do is I will send it, I take all the PII off of it, so I can send it to my own email.
So that's what, personal identifying information?
Yeah, like you can't send people's information to your home email, but you can remove the information so that you have a record that you reported something.
Okay. And you and I spoke off the air at one point, and I remember you telling me that you had people throughout your building that since you were a public, you know, a public face of whistleblowing, people would bring issues to you and report them to you. But you pointed out something I hadn't really thought of, that those folks at some point later, if management gets on their case because they find out that they're providing information, they have no protection because they've been under the radar the whole time.
Yeah, and that's something that I would suggest to anybody. Don't be anonymous, because there's certain pieces of information that I get that I would never know that information. Someone had to tell me this. So obviously someone else is out there undercover being a whistleblower. So you have to figure that person really has no protection because they didn't whistleblow.
Yeah, and in some cases the information they're giving you could have only come from a certain person. So
it's kind of a catch 22 though, because people know. Okay, so how about this? Is it better to be a team of people, or I would think
definitely.
It's better to be a team than an individual, but is that true?
I think it's definitely better to be a team, but then you have to make sure the members of your team have credibility, because the VA is real quick to knock on a whistleblower and say, oh, that person's a liar, they're failing their performance standards. They'll try and make the person look like they're crazy when they're reporting things, so you have to be careful who's on your team.
Oh, yeah, that's a really important, I guess I kind of forgot about that. Yeah, if you have somebody who's kind of flaky or kind of only in it for them, and they, you know, you always have those people who play both sides of the fence.
Yeah, and you can't have an embellisher, because when I report things, I want to make sure every bit of it's true. And if I can't have a piece of paper to prove everything I'm going to say, I'm probably not going to say it yet until I can get proof. So some people will just report everything where they have no proof about it, and they look like they're embellishing the truth, and then they can't prove it, so then they become untrustworthy.
That makes sense. I hadn't really
so
thought.
You always want to have proof, or else you won't get anywhere. And once you whistleblow and you're on the radar, you need to do it. You need to be successful. Because if we would have went to the IG and they said, oh, the things that you reported, we didn't find anything. Well, we still have to work there then, and it's uncomfortable when then you look like you told on somebody, but you might have not been telling the truth. Even though you were, you just couldn't prove it.
Sure. Yeah, you wind up being the one who cried wolf, as they say.
Yep.
And then when you go again, so there is a bit of a strategy to it. Not that you play, you actually just went there to go do your job. I realize that, but now the strategy has changed. We'll talk more about this in just a couple seconds. We've got to take a quick break. You are listening to We the People Radio. Please join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. This could cover either way. Could be the whistleblowers. Could be the employers. Welcome to We the People Radio. We are joined by Kristen Rule out of Philadelphia. Kristen, how long have you lived in Philadelphia anyway?
I moved to Philadelphia the night before my first day at the VA. So, since August of 2007.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, you've been there a while.
So you've been there long enough. We were trading pictures the other day. I was sending her pictures of Mount Shasta, and she said she's looking at the Philadelphia skyline. I was like, oh, yeah. My pictures were pretty good, though, aren't they?
Yes, beautiful.
I was out in the boonies, working in the boonies, which was nice. Love a good day in the boonies. So, okay, you said there are probably 20 people at your facility, and I was talking to Ryan the other night, and he said there are like 3,000 people who work there?
I really honestly don't know how many people work here.
Yeah, he said it was like 3,000 people, and it's a ton. Now, are you guys all in the same building, or is pension management, call center, are those all separate places?
The call center is a separate place, but it's moving to our building, I think, on May 27th, so we'll be back all in the same building. We used to house a Social Security and a Social Security office, and they left, so the call center is moving in there.
Wow. So basically everybody in your giant skyscraper is VA, huh?
Yep, hopefully.
Mm, nice. So you get a lot of elevator time with people, and are there some people now that just kind of steer clear of you?
Yeah, some. I mean, there's always going to have management always has their loyal crew that probably hopes that if management survives this and stays in power, that they'll be the next people to be managers, so they'll, you know, stay true to them till the end. But most people they enjoy what we're doing and are happy that we're trying to make a difference.
So at the end of the day, have you seen change because of this?
I've seen change as to the way I'm treated because of this, but overall for the veterans' sake and the way that the procedures are done in our office, I haven't seen change. I see them being reactive and fixing things that were found, but I don't see them preventing anything from happening in the future.
In light of the recent hearings and the stuff that's been brought to light, do you think that's going to matter? Do you think they're going to respond to that in a positive way and make the changes that need to be made?
I think if they fire a few people, people will respond much better because they'll realize that they have to, even if they don't have it in them to do the right thing, they have no choice but to do the right thing or they'll be next. But I think if everybody just gets shuffled around and moves to a different job and keeps their grade and keeps their money, it's going to be a bad lesson because then there's going to be no incentive for people to do the right thing.
Sure. There has to be accountability. And if there's no accountability, then it will continue.
You got to roll a couple heads.
Yeah, so
they've got
off with their heads.
You've got to draw a little blood, and then they'll know you're serious.
Yeah, I mean, somebody has to be used as an example. Because I mean, I think there's been a lot of bad things happening in our office, and I don't understand how issuing a report and attending a training or two can fix all those people.
Yeah, no kidding. And then, okay, so with the first set of things that you guys brought up, how did that work? You went to, what was actually the process? You went to the media first? No.
I first reported things up the chain of command because I didn't know all the things that I know today.
And that was the wrong move,
so,
right?
That was the worst thing I could have ever done because I thought I was helping, but I didn't realize they don't want you to help. So as they were trying to cover up, I was trying to help, and we were bumping heads, but they have more power than me internally, so I realized that was not a good move. So then I started saying, well, in order to do something about this, I need to get someone from the outside interested. So then I started contacting Congress people and trying to find somebody that would believe in what I was saying and help me, who had a little bit more power. So then I figured, well, if I had them in my corner, at least if stuff started happening to me, someone could go up to bat for us, if we could show them that what we were telling was the truth. So then I started reporting things to the Office of Special Counsel, which really got me nowhere. And I reported things to the Inspector General, and they had an investigation, and they said this was occurring, but nothing really was being done to change it. So we went to the media. And the media was the first time that we got attention on the problem and that they knew they had to do something about it. And I think once you go to the media, it kind of says it's a statement about yourself. Like, the government managers think they're in power and in control the whole time, but once you go to the media, they kind of back off and realize, wow, you know, one phone call from this person can set our world upside down. So
yeah, because at that point, they're having to respond. They have no choice.
Yep.
They have to.
Now, is this print or TV or what kind of media?
The first thing we did was we went to the New York Times.
Oh, that's kind of good media.
Like, yeah, and so one of the reporters, we were explaining what was going on, and he was very interested in it, and he wrote a story. He wrote two stories in 2012, I think it was. And so he wrote one about the double payments and one about the mail shredding. And then that prompted, from doing that, I think it made the IG take the investigation a little more serious. And they did admit that these things that we were saying were happening, but they admitted that they couldn't find these payments. Like, they couldn't data mine correctly to find all of them, they weren't sure how many there were because it was hard to locate them, which is true. It is a big problem finding these payments. So it kind of fizzled away then, and a lot of the other things I was complaining about, like them not collecting the money after they paid people twice, it all just fizzled away until June of 2014. Then there was a second Inspector General investigation, which then with that came congressional hearings, and now I think it's been so exposed, I don't think it'll fizzle away this time.
That's kind of nice. And how did you get the reporter? Was it somebody that someone knew, or did you just send emails to the New York Times and finally somebody responded? Or
yeah, what had happened was I had represented an employee who had been fired in a case against our office. He worked there, and he needed help, and he said, can you help me out? And I said, all right, I'll do my best. And so they put him on paid admin leave, so he had unlimited time to send emails to anybody. So during the day, I would go to work, and I'd do my job all day. And he'd be at home getting paid by the VA because they illegally fired him and didn't want him in the office after he won his job back. They paid him to sit at home. So nice. He'd sit at home and send emails all the time to congressmen, senators, media people. And, you know, for every 100 you send, probably someone will bite. So he got in contact with somebody from the New York Times and then, of course, put me in contact with them. And that's how we ended up there.
I bet that, or maybe it didn't, but what was the repercussions when they,
when they showed
you,
up in the New York
were,
Times?
Well, when they found out you were representing this person, did that make things kind of tough for you on the job?
Oh
yeah.
That's true.
But when we first had done this, I don't think they took us serious. Like when he said, oh, my representative is going to be this girl that works downstairs, they're probably like, well, how are you even going to prepare? You have to work an eight-hour day, and we have mandatory overtime. So I think they thought, you know, I don't think they took us serious, but we made sure we were going to win that case. We stayed up, we researched laws, and we ended up finding that they violated due process when they fired him. So we had a hearing at the Merit Systems Protection Board, and we won, and the agency was reversed, and he got his job back, and he showed up to work the day he was supposed to go to work. He got fingerprinted, they gave him his badge, and then they proposed to fire him again that day.
You're kidding.
No, I wish I was. I mean, I spent a lot of hours on that. So then we geared up again for round two, and we even told them, listen, don't fire him again. Here's the law that says you can't. But they did it anyway.
What were they firing him for?
The production points. What they'll do is if you're a whistleblower, you have to make sure that you get your production points at work each day. Because if you want to file a case for whistleblower retaliation, if you are indeed a whistleblower and you're action that they did you falls under retaliation, then you have to also, there's one more catch to it. The agency has to prove the agency had no legal reason to fire you, so aside from this whistleblowing. So what they'll do is they'll make you fail your production points so that they can go after you that way. So this guy was brand new, and we would argue that they were withholding work from him and, you know, giving him the tougher cases that didn't generate points. So that he wasn't, you know, and sometimes they go in and they invalidated some of his points in the Aspen system. Like he did some claims in September and got credit for them. And then in December, when he was supposed to be evaluated for this improvement plan, they took them out.
Nice.
So originally, though, he was a whistleblower?
Oh, yeah. He was a very big whistleblower. You should talk to him sometime. He's very interesting. He's a veteran. He served in the Navy. He has a law degree. And he used to report things that were illegal in the building, and they didn't like it. So he, you know, mysteriously kept failing for his points. But that's why I think the point system is such a bad thing. It gives them power to basically hide discrimination and retaliation behind failing someone for their numbers.
Right.
Interesting. And there's no real...
They got a little built-in safety net there.
Sure.
Basically pull any punch they want.
Because then if you say they did it on purpose, then they're like, you're just a bad employee.
Yeah, you're not doing your job.
God, that is such a
And you have to prove it. So then it becomes you didn't fail, the VA failed you, but you need to prove that in court. So you have to show, you know, oh, what we had to do is we had to go find letters that were written by other employees. When you work at the VA, you have this thing called a digit range where you might work on everybody's cases who have the last two digits of their social security number for 50. So if you see a claim that ends in a 50 and someone else's initials are on it, you know someone's been working on your cases. So what we had to do was gather up a bunch of letters with other people's initials that were his work to show that they were giving away his easy work. So it takes it's a lot of work. Once you start to get targeted there, you have to be a great note taker.
You better step up your game, huh?
Yeah, oh yeah. You always have to be a step ahead of them because they're good at this. They've been doing this for a long time.
And there's more of them than there are of you. On that happy note, we've got to take another quick break. We'll be right back with Kristen Rule, talking about whistleblowers and the VA, and God knows we need lots more, tons more. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Could be the new whistleblower theme song.
It's all about the cameras.
We pulled out two of our best. I was hoping you enjoyed that.
Oh, my God. For the rest of my life, when I hear that, I'm going to think of this.
Oh, my gosh. We did one on surveillance. We had a couple of programs actually on surveillance, and Bob found the one about when you're in the shower and they're watching you. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
It does give new meaning.
I got a question, Kristen. What other things does the VA fire people for or use as an excuse to fire people? I mean, typically, you know, if someone's not doing their job, that's usually the go-to reason to let somebody go in private industry or, you know, maybe a customer service issue or something like that. But what other types of things get people in hot water and get them dismissed from the VA?
Their latest thing in the last few months is they've been accusing people of cursing, and they'll write you up, and they'll say that you cursed in the office. Yes. Somebody had to file an EEO complaint because they accused him of cursing, and the man said, I didn't curse. And, of course, they have no proof if he cursed or he didn't curse. It's one supervisor saying, you cursed at me, and the employee saying, well, I don't know what you're talking about. I didn't do that.
Does it have to be something good, or is it just garden variety, you know, hell and damn type stuff?
Well, this employee was accused of saying the F word, but I mean, in
right
general, yeah, it's really bizarre. It's a lot of wasted time. So they try to get you in trouble for things like that, which they'll never be able to prove. So it's really a waste of time. They will tell you you take too long of a break so that they can get you in trouble for not being, not following the proper rules. They'll say that people have signed in early. So when you get there, you have to sign your name on a piece of paper and what time you get there. But there's no clock right there. So some people might have a watch on. Some people might look at their cell phone. Some people might just guess. Some people might say, oh, so-and-so signed in before me. I'll just write that time because he just signed in. So their latest thing is they've been watching people and accusing them of signing in too early.
Now, why don't they have a time clock? I mean, if that's an issue, the way to stop that would be just to put a time clock in and punch a card.
Yeah, no, we don't have anything like that. Or, you know, we all wear a badge, and anytime you want to go in a door, you have to swipe it. So even when you come in, you could swipe somewhere
the
badge that we have. But, yeah, we don't. It's funny because it's the honor system, but then they don't believe anybody.
That's great.
Why does that just make perfect sense in the context of the VA? Oh, my gosh. And AWOL is another biggie, right? You have a lot of disabled veterans, and it seems like, you know, anybody who's out for a service, a lot of times it's a service-connected disability. For heaven's sakes, they're at the dang VA. They should know what a service-connected disability is. And yet they have a note from their doctor, or they get taken off work by their physician, and they get fired for being AWOL.
Or they'll tell you the note that you brought in isn't good enough. You need to go get another note. That's a common thing that they'll do. Or if you want a day off or you need a day off, for instance, when it snowed here in the winter, some people said, oh, I can't come in because, you know, there's a foot of snow outside. I can't get there. Or the buses aren't running, whatever the reason was. So if it's not sick leave, but if it's annual leave, so if, you know, if you're not sick the day of the snowstorm and you have to use a vacation day, they say that you must speak to a supervisor. Well, when it snowed, half the supervisors didn't show up, and the other half teleworked. So these poor employees are calling these extensions a whole bunch of times. No one's answering. And then they had to leave a message to their boss saying, listen, I can't get there today. I'm trying to call out. I know I have to speak to a person, but no person is available. I'm leaving you a message. And they got charged AWOL.
No kidding.
Mm. Yeah, so that's like these little tactics. This is the kind of stuff that they do.
And email won't work?
Oh, no, never. You must talk to a human, even when there's no human there.
Of course, if you talk to a human, there's no proof you talk to a human.
Exactly.
Right.
That's super handy.
I mean, that's in our business. I mean, if you want something, you know, if you're going to complain about something, you better have documentation. Just like you were saying, you have to have proof. And typically that's an email or a voice recording or something where, you know, you have backup. But just I talked to somebody and they said this never flies. But that's what they require.
That's what they require.
And then if you're sick, you're allowed to leave a voicemail. But if you're not sick, you're not allowed to leave a voicemail.
Well, so what if you're...
sick of the snow?
That wasn't what I was going to say.
Oh, that's not okay.
Someone had their house flooded. That was another issue. Their house was flooding, and they're calling their boss, and their boss isn't answering. So they left a message, and they were charged AWOL because they didn't speak to somebody.
Oh, brilliant.
Well, their house was flooding.
Yeah.
Wow. And so then once you file as a whistleblower, all bets are off on the game then. So all the things that were difficult before become 1,000,000% more difficult, I would imagine, because now
you have to make sure, you know, when I take a break, I make sure it's like 14 minutes, not 15, because if it's one, I was accused of taking too long of a break once. Past 15 minutes. So, you know, there's a lot of people that go to the gym at lunch and, you know, they probably take a little more than 30 minutes, but
how do they know how much time you took if there's no way to clock in and clock out? Is that when you swipe your badge in and out?
From the time that they accused me, they were following me and timing me.
Oh my gosh. I don't think that's illegal. They can't stalk you, can they?
Sure they can. They do it all the time. Nice.
Ooh, well, that's spooky.
Yeah, you know, and that's another thing. How can you prove this? How can you prove how long
sure.
I was outside? But I call the VA. This is my joke, how I keep my sanity with the VA. I call it the Truman Show. Have you ever seen that movie?
Oh, yeah.
Cue the pedestrians.
Cue the pedestrians.
Yeah, like I feel like when I'm in there, it's just a different world. Like, you know, the rules are there, but they sometimes don't follow them. And there's supposed to be things that would protect me, but it doesn't really happen, so... I just accept the fact that I'm at the Truman Show for 8.5 hours.
Wow.
Well, we have a situation where, well, I won't say I work there because it's a friend of mine works there. And we have one person that talks loud and I was told that I'm going to pepper spray him in the face and then just say, seriously, dude, I thought you were going to attack me. But I don't imagine that would probably work.
Yeah, that won't work either. Yeah, I would imagine pepper spray doesn't
work. If you're off-site and there's a supervisor following you, though, I mean, isn't that kind of like stalking?
Yeah.
Well, no, I was on-site. They were timing me. And then they called my – this wasn't even a supervisor. This was my supervisor's manager. And she was, I guess, timing me. So then she called my supervisor and told him he better come out and get me. And I was on a phone call with a lawyer. It was so embarrassing. They ran out and, like, you know, said, you've been out past 15 minutes. You need to come in. And I said, great, I have off today. I'm allowed to be out here 4 hours, you know. But
unless you're my mom.
Yeah.
So you, exactly. In Ryan's, he's actually, when asked Ryan about it, he was there when that happened.
Oh, my gosh. Well, we've got David on the line from San Francisco. He has a question for you. Fire away, David.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I wanted to ask you, I remember in some statistical ways, like back in the Civil War, I think it was an average, if instead of, there got to be a strategy with the military of intentionally wounding the other side, because it would take, if I remember right, during the Civil War, it would take 11 people to take care of an injured soldier. And so if you wounded the other side to such a degree, you would take so much of their population to take care of the wounded soldiers that you could basically win by decimation like that. And I think by World War I, they had brought it down to an 8-to-1 ratio. So now when we hear about the VA and that they're so useless, it gets into, you know, how many hours are they spending on studying their own employees rather than taking care of the troops?
I totally agree. I think there's a lot of people there that have too much time on their hands. They spend their day making lists. They just paper push. Like Washington will say, we need to get these cases done on this list, and then the managers will send that to the next level down and say, and so those people have some free time, I guess, to do these things.
Well, I think it also gets back to, you know, when the VA can't get the job done, they need more money. They need, you know, more money will cure the problem, which it never does.
So let's keep everybody
running
around.
But we just keep throwing more money at it, and, you know, that's a great point, David. I mean, more money doesn't solve the issue. It's procedures.
I like the Civil War thing, though. Kristen, maybe next time you have to go represent somebody, you can use that.
Yeah, definitely.
Ask them if it's that 11-to-1 ratio, or are they just trying to take people off the fighting line?
Well, where I was actually going to go with it, there's after World War II, it was discovered, you know, of course, that a whole bunch of Nazis had gotten into this country. The CIA had allowed them in, the Dulles brothers, a bunch of different people facilitated that rat line. And actually, the CIA was helped developed by one of the famous Nazi intelligence guys. And there was a Project Gladio, G-L-A-D-I-O, and that was where the Nazis, after World War II, were intentionally putting themselves into positions of power so that they could facilitate the rise of the Fourth Reich. And so I'm wondering whether the VA is filled with some of these people from Gladio who are intentionally making sure that the troops are not covered. I was watching The Daily Show not too long ago, and they were saying that the VA, it takes 44 days to be seen by a doctor. And, I mean, that's so insane, you know, that you got a problem, you need to get it seen, and it's going to take you 44 days to get an appointment. That they intentionally, I mean, that gets into far, far from an 11-to-1 ratio. You know, they got to be dealing with a 50-to-1 ratio when it takes 44 days. And so whether these people in the VA are part of this Gladio, that they're intentionally trying to drag down America to, you know, get everybody so disenchanted with their own country that they don't have any loyalty to it.
I kind of like that. Actually, it's so much more, it's so much easier to accept than the fact that the garden variety incompetence has risen to a position where we only promote the people who will do it the wrong way. Because it's just too depressing.
That's a point that's, I think, true with any government agency. Anytime you have the government take over management of anything, it's going to take 10 times more people and become less efficient. It just seems that way. Anyway.
Yeah, bigger it gets, the tougher it is.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but
I think you're good.
Well, you know, I see, you know, so many things that could be privatized in California and done for a lot less money than having government agencies do it. So, this can't be any different.
However, that is a different program.
Yes, it is.
We must take a quick break on this program. Thank you, David, for your call. We appreciate it. I'm looking up Project Gladio when I get home, because I'm sure there will be a way for us to use that in the future. I can just see it now. Yeah. And the Civil War thing, I like that, too. That's awesome.
Yeah, we can bring the Nazis into it, too, you know. So.
Ding.
Yeah, ding.
All righty, we're going to be right back. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. We have tons of archives, and this show will be up and running on archive in about half hour after we're done, I suppose. Be right back.
called my doctor on the telephone. Help me, doctor, something's wrong. I can't shake it, it's gone too far. He said, tell me what the symptoms are. He said, my hands are sweaty and my knees are weak. I can't eat and I can't sleep. It's turning me every way but loose.
There you go, Kristen. Now you have a break song. Jeez Louise. You know, we have to have a much either a much longer show or more breaks so we can fit in more songs. Because really necking it down to the good ones is tough. So many choices, so little time. So, all right. So in the last few minutes here that we have with you before we bring Ryan on, what would you tell people if they're out there, especially if they're at a VA around the country and they're thinking, I'm not going to be the first one, you know, nobody wants to be first.
Then find some friends and do a group effort and everybody do it together. Because when we did the New York Times article, it was Ryan, myself, and another guy named Ken Crandall. So all three of us did it together. Ryan and I had to go to work the next day. Ken, of course, was on paid admin leave, but it wasn't so bad knowing there was someone else in the building that could relate.
Yeah, and I have the picture of you guys. Don't I still have that on the site here? I'm scanning down the page.
That's why I felt so bad for Rusty Ann, because that's the first thing she told me at the hearing. She said, I didn't have anybody. I was all by myself, and I can't imagine doing this all by yourself.
Well, see, and Tony was ahead of her, and he got picked off. The thing that they clipped him for, again, was AWOL, disabled vet, out on medical leave, and they filed him as AWOL. They fired him and then ultimately had to rehire him because it was a wrongful termination. But then they fired him again right after. It's really weird when you were telling the story earlier.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like their standard operating
procedure.
Yeah,
I was like, hey, I know
there.
That story. It's a different guy. He's 3,000 miles away. So now he's got, I don't know, 11 EEO complaints out there, and basically nothing's happening.
I know. It may take like 2 years to get resolved, those EEO complaints. But eventually, I mean, the guy who's got in our office who got fired twice, he lives in Florida now. He'll probably never work again. So, I mean, he wanted to work and come back to the VA, but after everything that happened to him, he said, I can't go in that building anymore.
Yeah, I could imagine that.
Well, the stress has just got to be overwhelming.
Yeah, it's got to be massive.
You just know once they're after you, you really won't ever get a fair chance again. That's why I choose to stay at the job that I have. I don't apply for other jobs. Right now, I'm scared because at least I know with my job, I know what I have to do to succeed. And I've done my job for a while, so for them to start picking on me and saying I'm not doing my job, it'll be a little harder. But if I should apply for a new job that I'm not familiar with, that's a chance for them to get me.
Oh, so if you were to switch into a different, back to pension management or something like that, you'd wind up potentially under the big-time scrutiny and having to climb that hill again?
Yeah, because if I move to a production job, I'll have to worry about that. If I don't know the job, then I won't know that they don't give you much time to learn things at the VA, so I don't want to have to learn something and be given half the time I need to learn it to learn it and then be told I'm not performing and them get me that way. So I just stay put for now.
isn't that crazy? And so even if you're good at it, if you're good at this, and those seem to be the people who traditionally come forward, and yet the VA routinely, I know to the congressional offices, that what the VA says is that these are all just disgruntled employees.
Always. They'll tell you that we're crazy. So that's another reason I told a couple of the people that tell me things, you know, but are afraid to come forward. I say, all right, I'll take one for the team because this isn't my first job I've ever had. It starts to look weird if, you know, I'll be 40 next month and I've never gotten in trouble. I've never been arrested. I've never had detention. So when I got to the VA, I started getting this rap sheet internally, and it doesn't make sense that you can go through your
whole
life.
You're a wild one now.
Yeah, but it's okay. It's just a Truman rap sheet.
You become a bad girl at the VA. So that's why I said, you know, some people who might have had something, you know, in their past, they'll use that against them. So it's good if you just have your production points that you need, you haven't been in trouble at work before, then it's hard for them to act like you're a misfit.
That is just nuts. Absolutely nuts. Okay. And then do you see in your facility, do you see them using people's disabilities against them?
For sure. Definitely.
Yeah. That is wrong on so many levels.
PTSD, back problems, whatever it is. And a lot of the cases, people have asked for a reasonable accommodation and just never happens.
Yeah, I don't think they're familiar enough with the legal side of EEO complaints. So they take their time and then, you know, as the person's suffering. And then in the end, they don't care if they have to pay out a lot of money because it's not their money.
That's true. That's true. They just get the taxpayers to foot the bill for their bad behavior.
Right.
Great deal.
So to them, it's like, well, if they don't feel like granting this accommodation, why should they?
Yeah, you can't make us.
Right.
But then they also have their bonus program still in place, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen legislation trying to get rid of the bonuses, but it seems, I mean, we got a bonus last year, I will say. Like, our bonuses aren't the ones you read in the newspapers, but they're still our bonuses because we did get one last year.
Yeah, and if they're performance-based, that's one thing. But a lot of these are I know at one point in one facility they were cobbling it together out of, like expense categories, mileage, that kind of thing. And they were siphoning it off and using it for a bonus program that they had invented for themselves, which is fairly clever accounting.
They call them performance-based, but there's all these categories. Like, there's a production part of the category, a quality part, organizational support. So if they don't like you and they don't want you to get a bonus, they'll say that you don't cooperate. And then they'll give you a lower score in that category. So even if you have great production and great quality, if you get a low score in this cooperation element, well, then you won't get a bonus.
Unbelievable. Kristen, how our time flies by. I just wanted to let people know I did put a picture of you and Ryan and Ken from that article. The 2010 article is down at the bottom of the page. You know what? We love talking to you. Thanks a lot for joining us on Mother's Day.
Thanks for having me. Have a great rest of your day.
Absolutely. It just goes too fast. Thanks a million.
Yep. Bye.
All right, folks, stick with us. We have another hour here. And if you can't, catch us on the archive at wethepeopleradio.us. It's all there for you. And this song is special for Kristen.
Stay tuned for Hour 2 of We the People on KCNR Shasta Redding.
Good afternoon and welcome back to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us, where all the archives are. Oh, here we go, and the archives will be ready in 30 to 60 minutes. How great is that? So if you're listening live on Sunday afternoon, that archive's going to be up pretty quick.
So and if now, you're not, then
Well, listen to it because the archive's already there, and this was a, you know, useless announcement. Hey, so
you're like putting the archives up 1 hour at a time now?
Well, Robert's been splitting them for us.
Okay.
Yeah, so we usually have
the first hour will be up before the second hour's done.
Should be. Oh. Look at that. We're, you know, this is a lot of pressure because then we'll have to do it again sometime. Maybe we should have just let people be surprised. All righty. So we're sticking with the whistleblower theme. but we're switching people. We are going to be joined. Is he already on there?
He is.
Well, we already have Ryan Cease on the line. And he was involved in the whistleblowing with Kristen at the beginning. There is an article, a really good article, actually, at the bottom of the radio page called Double Payments Bedevil Veterans Pension System from September of 2012. And it's got a good picture there of Ryan, Kristen, and Ken Crandall, who we haven't visited with yet. But Ryan's still working at the VA. So this is kind of an interesting whistleblower look because most of the people we talk to, you know, have been fired or forced out or whatever happened. But these two are still there and have managed to be successful in their jobs and deal with the, let's just call it abuse. What the heck? Is that close, Ryan?
Somewhat, yeah. How you doing?
And hey, how long have you been at the VA, by the way?
I think about 5 years now, approximately.
All right. So what were you doing when you met Kristen? Were you guys both in the same place? Or give us a little thumbnail sketch.
Well, I started out at the PMC triage, so I started from the bottom, just sorting mail and putting stuff in the file room. So as a clerk, and as years progressed, I moved along to become a VSR.
So he was at the Pension Management Center, and now you're a Veterans Service Representative.
Yes, a Veterans Service Representative at the VSC, which is compensation.
Okay, so now you do the benefits. Now you do benefits claims.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. We have to acronym translate sometimes, and then people will just have to go do their homework, I guess. So where did you find the problems from the beginning? Kristen was saying the first day she went in, she realized that there was probably something kind of haywire. When did you figure it out?
I was appointed to work duplicate records when I was in PMC triage. And so what I did was I consolidated, I located and consolidated double records for veterans, which usually occurs when a veteran had a claim number before or if there is a wrong Social Security number in the system. When I started identifying a couple of these duplicate records, I stumbled across Kristen, and she was discovering double payments.
Mm.
So I knew a lot of the technical stuff, and she knew about the legal stuff. So I basically wanted to work with her and to isolate these problems and figure out a solution. When we did find out a solution and we wanted to report it, they told us that we didn't know anything. And so we went through the proper chain of command. We had meetings, yet nothing happened. And then Kristen discovered other things, and I tagged along with her because I always say to people, I trust people who I bleed with.
Mm. Sure.
Especially with the VA.
She was willing to, you know, stick her neck out on the block, and so she wasn't somebody just, you know, hey, Ryan, you should go tell him this.
No. I mean, we went through the proper chain of command. And the thing is, if we told you what the problem was, and you keep doing it, we had to say something. We had to move up, you know, to escalate the level of it.
Yeah, what kind of money were you looking at going down the drain?
A couple of thousands. I mean, like, right now, if we really wanted to be realistic, we're probably losing millions upon billions of dollars. And with these duplicate records and duplicate payments, we don't look for them. We wait for them to, you know, we wait until we stumble across them. And that's the problem. Now, if you had a team dedicated to look for these things, you'd be able to save a lot of money and a lot of headaches when it comes down to veterans missing records. They all come hand in hand because there'll be missing service treatment records, missing rating decisions, and you didn't realize that it was in another folder that the veteran claimed a long time ago. So that's how it is.
That's crazy. And see, out here, what we've seen in Oakland is that nobody's getting paid. They're withholding payments. And on your side of the line, a huge problem is duplicate payments. I'll tell you what, it's literally like feast or famine.
Yeah. Well, the thing about it is this. It's not more so on the compensation side. It's more on the pension side. a lot more problems with, because when it comes to pension, we hardly ever request for the service treatment records. So most of the time, verification of records don't occur. With compensation, we have to obtain the records. So when we come across a service number, it raises a flag saying, hey, there's two records here. For pension, that's a different story.
I tell people how the pension thing works. We've talked a lot about benefits. People understand health care because they all, you know, everybody has to deal with that. What is pension management? What does that mean?
Well, there's two things. There's the PMC and the VSC. So PMC is the Pension Management Center. What they do is basically, I can't say this, the welfare of the VA, but if it's low-income family needing money, low-income veterans needing money, and to me, it's a lot. It's very important because majority's veterans who are coming for pension are requesting for aid in attendance and so on. So the money needs to be ready for them instantly, in my opinion.
Okay.
Compensation basically is based on how much, if they were service connected, and they go by percentage, and that's how it is. But to me, I always believe a pension is very important, and it needs to be squared away faster than anything.
Sure, because these are people who are receiving pension because of income. This isn't because they're injured. This is because they served, and they are low income.
Yes.
Okay. And so, why are there two kinds of pension management? You mentioned two things.
Well, there's the VSC's compensation and pension. So there's only two entities there.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, we get a little education while we do this too. So we don't want to let it just blow by and go, Yeah.
And trust me, I'll probably never go to work there or try to take anybody's job at the VA.
No, because we're both going to get fired.
Yeah, that's really not my cup of tea.
Yeah, Bill and I would get fired right away.
Yeah.
Nah, it's
for
the
smart
thing about it is. It's just like the military, you know, you step in not knowing anything, but somebody's going to train you and properly train you. And as you go along, you start learning the ropes. So it's not like, it's too complicated. If you get there for if you stay there for a couple of years, you start getting the mix of things, you know.
Yeah, we figured we'd probably just get fired because we'd get frustrated. You know, first time somebody followed me around, that'd be the end of that.
Yeah.
It'd be a short,
A chop to the head.
Yeah, it'd be a short trip. Unbelievable. Well, okay, so then once you pointed out that these things were not going properly, what started happening to you?
Well, this is the thing about it. It started out with the double payments, and then it started, and it came to mail shredding, and then it came to hiding claims, and then the list kept on building up, and other employees would come up to Kristen and I and tell us all these things is wrong, yet nothing's happening. So I used to sit in front of military mail a long time ago, and when I knew that you can shred certain documents if it is properly reviewed, you know, after 2 years and all that stuff, but majority of stuff that was sitting there was not reviewed, and it was prepped for shredding. And
what type of mail was this? Was this request for claims, or was this just
evidence?
Well, this is the thing. These are documents coming into the triage department, and we're supposed to sort it and place it with the right veteran's record. Now, there's these things called military mail where they're unidentifiable, meaning there's no claim number, sometimes there's no name, and it just gets sorted and placed in this bin. Now, a lot of the employees there are on their points. So some employees don't really have, you know, the integrity to do their job, and they'll just put it in those bins and hope that somebody will find them later down the line and fix it. And
the bins they're putting these things in do get reviewed again?
Yes. They're supposed to.
What's the procedure for going into a shredder bin?
Well, this is a thing. It goes in those bins. Then it gets reviewed to check if there is an address we can send it back to, a phone number, or some sort of identifiable name that we can contact or forward a letter to or the document to. And then we'll consider it military mail if it's not really identifiable. The only way you can do that is you really thoroughly look at the documents.
Sure.
Now, my issue is majority of the documents that are in there were original receipts from either Puerto Rico or, you know, somewhere in the whole entire East Coast. And you can't get copies of these once, you know, once you give it to us.
They are the copies.
I mean, yeah, they are the original.
That's
are,
it.
Are any of these documents transferred to digital format and saved on a server someplace before they're, you know, filed or
no.
shredded? Or why not?
This was prior to the electronics documents. This is prior to VBMS. We had this something called Virtual VA. It was almost like VBMS, but it only these documents come into triage, and it stops at triage and goes to these bins. It doesn't move forward from there because they're unidentifiable, quote-unquote. But if you really look at them, if you really thoroughly check them, a lot of them were identifiable. But somehow or another, a couple of supervisors were basically forced to sort through them as fast as they can and place it in these boxes that says to be shredded. Now, Kristen and I reported it. Obviously, OIG gave the RO a heads-up warning. And these boxes magically disappeared.
Now, again, these documents could have been a request for a claim or first contact. How do I file for a claim?
Yes.
That sort of thing.
It can be anything.
It, or
can
it could also be somebody's medical records or,
yep,
you know, all these things that can never be found again. So they contact the inspector general. The inspector general calls the regional office, the RO, and tells them, hey, one of your guys is telling on you, and then, poof, they're gone.
Yep.
Well, they didn't make it.
How many? And what kind of boxes are we talking about? Like, what kind of volume?
I don't know, but these are one of those typical white boxes that we, you know, office boxes.
Like a banker box?
Yeah, and it'll be filled to the brim of documents. You know, each document is, 9 out of 10 is one person, you know, it's like, it's ridiculous.
Sure. Wow.
That's, yeah. So you pointed that out. The inspector general comes in, takes a look at it, and says, gosh, we can't prove it? Or what did they find?
Well, what they said was, well, we can't prove the fact that these are shredded or there's any shredding went on. There's no proof. And how exactly are you going to prove that? If you gave the RO a heads up already, hey, guys, we're coming here. Obviously, hide the evidence. Do damage control. It's not cool, you know. You're supposed to go, surprise, here it is.
Yeah.
I'm here.
Yeah, run it to the shredder before we get there. We'll be there Thursday. Oh, my
exactly.
gosh. Okay, so while our heads are exploding, I just looked at the time. Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Need to take a quick break. Thank our advertisers. You are listening to We the People Radio. We'll be right back with you. In the meantime, join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Maybe they were going to rhyme it with mail there for a second. That somehow we were going to have a mail song. Okay, I was wrong. What was it anyway?
It was Jump and Jive.
It was Jump, Jive, and Whale.
Oh, I need to get out more.
Brian Setzer in the orchestra.
So you're listening to We the People Radio. We are here with Ryan Cease, a whistleblower at the Philadelphia VA. So, Ryan, what other stuff should people know about your experience, we'll call it?
Well, that's the thing about it. Like, a lot of the employees at our building are amazing workers, okay? And the thing is, a lot of people are probably focused on, A, the VA is doing a horrible job with our cases. A lot of us actually do amazing jobs, you know? Like, the problem is, when it comes down to the resources, how it's used, it's not that great, you know? Like management, it's a big issue when it comes down to communication with employees. You know, when a lot of these employees are on the front lines or lower grade pay grades, we basically get dismissed and saying that we don't know anything about our jobs. That's what Kristen and I have been going through for years. That whenever we raise an issue, we found something. There's something wrong with the system. We would bring it up, and we'll be told that we don't know what we're talking about. And that's a problem. That's a major problem. And for years, both Kristen and I has always provided ways of trying to get this resolved at the RO level first, with the regional office level, before it even goes to CEO. But we, you know, they just brush us off.
And do you both live in the same congressional district?
Yep.
So you were able to go to the same office for help?
Majority of the time, I would go to Kristen, and she would do a lot of the legwork when it comes down to contacting Congress and so on. You know, I do the technical aspect part. Like, I go through the whole entire system, and I know the system like the back of my hand. I'm the nerd when it comes down to these things. And so I trust Kristen with the legal stuff, and she would you know, collect all her points of contact to get where we're at today.
That's a great way to do it. So you guys just kind of, you guys worked on your strengths and kind of split up the work.
Yep, that's how it works.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, it's funny because whenever Kristen goes into a hearing, a lot of people are asking, Ryan, why don't you go to a hearing? Oh, no, I think Kristen's a really good talker. She's awesome. So I let her do all the job.
Yeah, I let Kristen do all the talking. What the heck?
So it seems to me that it would just be much easier if they would just let the employees, because I believe most of the employees there really want to do a good job and want to do the right thing. But it seems like that would be so much easier to let them do the job and let them do the right thing than it would be to continually throw these roadblocks up and prevent payments from going where they should be going. So what do you think their motivation is for doing it the way they're doing it?
Well, a lot of things came down to making the regional office look good in front of Congress. You know, as years I've been sitting there, they're always worried about points, or how many we've produced, and so on. They're so focused on the numbers that they forget that these veterans, these claims that are coming in are human beings.
Right.
You know, and that's where it comes down to it. They told us that, you know, these duplicate records is not enough to say that we need to focus on them compared to the backlog that we have now. What I'll look at is that these are people. You guys have enough employees here to start a project to fix this and work on the backlog too, you know. And the thing is, they don't really know how to manage their people and use their strengths to and give them the resources to fix these problems.
So they're more concerned with cleaning up the backlog, right, wrong, or indifferent, than they are processing the claims properly and getting the veterans the payments that are due. They're concerned with the numbers. They just want to run as many claims through as they can, and to do that they implement these silly rules and shredding bins and all this other stuff. Is that right?
Yes. Don't get me wrong. It's always good to help more than anything, you know. But to help more, but do it properly,
exactly.
You know, the correct way, instead of doing shortcuts here and there. Like, for instance, whenever I do a case, I love calling the veterans, you know, instead of sending a letter to the veteran, wait 30 days, and then come back and somehow or another don't get a response, and then we flip it to get ready. I don't like that. You know, I like to go one-on-one when it comes down to cases, because to me, I'm a veteran. So I always pretend that every case in front of me is my case.
Right.
How am I going to get myself paid? And I will do everything possible to get myself paid and get every single evidence I can possibly get legally to help myself. I always look at it that way.
Well, I would think that a personal phone call to a veteran does a couple of things. It tells a veteran that somebody is concerned about their case, is willing to pick up a phone and talk to them directly, and if you have questions on some detail of that case, you can talk to them directly and get it straightened out in order to, you know, move the case forward correctly. And they don't want you to make those phone calls.
The thing about the phone calls is, when it comes down to points, there are not a lot of points. And, you know, sometimes veterans would like a lot of, will throw a lot of questions at you, and you want to answer them properly. So that takes a little bit of time. Phone calls produces the least, the smallest points possible. And a lot of people avoid that because they know that once we contact a veteran, we have to write down what we did, upload it into the system, and then move forward.
Well, I would imagine on a phone call, you can't use, can you use that information they tell you, or do you have to have everything in writing in order to process a claim? Do you have to have some written document?
You don't have to. There's a lot of things that we can develop over the phone. Of course, there are certain things. If it's like you want to make something formal, you have to have it in writing.
Sure.
But when it comes down to at least inquiry, it helps, you know, with the communication between the person processing the case and the veteran. And there's a peace of mind when it comes down to if a employee calls the veteran. And it makes him a little bit happier, you know.
Oh, sure.
He was telling me the other day when we were on the phone, Ryan said every now and then he calls and he says, you know, "Hi, I'm calling from the VA," and the people are like, you know,
yeah,
right. On the defensive.
They're either mad at me, or they're surprised that I gave them a call.
Right,
You're like, wait, I'm a good guy.
But when you're making when you're making this phone call, I mean, let's face it, the claim at that point is somewhat in a draft stage. You're just trying to gather the information so that everything can be put in writing and then reviewed and pushed forward correctly. Is that right?
Well, majority of the time, sometimes, let's say a veteran misses an examination. Instead of just saying, "I'm going to flip this and I'm going to send it out merry way because the veteran missed his examination," I like to call and say, "Hey, what's going on? Why did you miss it?" You know?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it says it on the letters to say, if you miss your CMP examination, you're done. We're going to make a decision based on what we have here, you know. And there's no notes in the system. We don't know why the veteran didn't make it. I like to call the veteran and say, "Hey, what's going on? Let's give you another chance."
Well, right, I know what goes on out here is a lot of times they send the letters out after the compensation and pension exam was scheduled. that happens a lot. Or they're called and told that it's been canceled, and then when they don't show up, you missed your appointment, that's it.
Well, and then
tough luck for you.
You know, when you're sending letters out to an organization that has a history of losing mail and filing mail in the wrong spot, I mean, there's not a lot of confidence that I write a letter, it's going to get to the person working on my case in a timely fashion, or is it going to end up in one of these bins and looked at a year down the road?
Well, Ryan, let's let Bill in on the latest. Well, we probably better take a break before we go down that road. We're going to talk to you about how they're handling the mail now. I think you're going to be really excited. Bill's going to go berserk. Are you ready? I didn't actually tell him before the show. I figured we'd just tell him on the air.
I'm going for my blood pressure medication right now.
We're going to be removing all the sharp objects. We'll be right back with you. You should get rid of all your sharp objects, too, to our listeners out there. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back.
whenever I feel afraid, I hold my head erect and whistle a happy tune so no one will suspect I'm afraid. While shivering in my shoes, I strike a careless pose and whistle a happy tune, and no one ever knows I'm afraid.
Don't think that we don't know. Don't think that we're not trying. Don't think we move too slow. It's no use after crying, saying it's a mistake. It's a mistake.
I want to whistle a happy tune.
I want to go back to the song where you were afraid.
Yeah. Nobody will know I'm afraid.
That's a mistake. Yeah, well, I think that what we're going to talk about now is, I think this will be a good song for that. This is a good lead-in. Oh, and Ryan's in a band, too, see, so this is good. We should have good music on for Ryan. Hey, so tell Bill about the how they're handling the mail now.
Okay, so now most of the mail that's coming in it goes to a scan station. So before, we have these pieces of paper coming into our building, and it'd be easy for us to just get the paper, put it in the folder, and we're good to go. Now they're all going to the scan station.
This is every VA in the entire country, all
exactly.
58 benefits administration buildings. It all goes to one place, right?
Yeah, I think there's two places.
Oh, that's great! I feel better already.
It depends on each. Depends on where you live.
But they probably have hundreds or thousands of scanners going all the time, so this stuff gets processed right away, right?
So it can all be shot into little electrons and lost in the
ether.
Yep.
The ether.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
So is that going to speed things up, or is that going to protect the documents?
Well, a lot of people would say yes, it's going to speed things up, but right now, the scan station are in its infant, like its starting stage right now, and they're still trying to figure out the glitches, what's going on, how to make it faster, and so on. There'll be points where the scan stations cannot keep up with the demand.
Oh, I can't believe that.
So what does that mean? That'll delay some claims, right? So we already have issues of mail leaving the building, taking a long time, and mail now coming in, taking a long time to be processed. So with these scan stations, they would scan the paper or claim, and then it goes into this little portal in each regional office that they can go look into, and they can grab and place into a veteran's record. Now, the thing about that is that you can easily lose documents that way. You know,
because they're put in the wrong folder or file or
deleted.
So, or deleted, yes. And the thing about it is, some people will say, no, you cannot delete a document unless you complete a deletion form and somebody has to approve the deletion. Of course, okay, fine. If it's not deleted, it can get lost in this little thing. It's unassociated document area, where electronic documents go into that's not associated to a veteran's folder. Now, this comes back to the whole military mail, I cannot identify this document stage, right? But in an electronic form. So what does that mean? People don't really check these unassociated document bins.
Oh, brother.
Yeah, there's no...
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
somebody has to physically go in and open each one of these files to see what it is.
Exactly.
Oh, boy.
So, now, they're going to probably throw in some things and say, oh, dude, we'd hardly ever lose mail, blah, blah, blah. But have you ever asked a veteran and say, hey, did you send this to us? And then the veteran says, yes, but it's not in the system, and it's been 3 months now. Where did it go? Mm-mm.
Yeah, no kidding.
So is the trick then when you send a document to the VA, is the trick to put as much identifying information in there as you can, like claim numbers, dates, names, Social Security, on every single correspondence? I mean, is that going to matter?
If you want to go crazy about it, yeah, you can. If you want to put, like, your Social Security number in the corner of each document, that'll be, it's a great way to protect your documents coming into our scan station.
Well, they can never say they don't know where to put it or who it belongs to.
Exactly. There's no excuse, you know. But like I said, there are improvements. Things are getting better. But right now, it's still scary.
Well, they operate, I asked you this the other day and then promptly forgot the answer you gave me. How many different computer systems?
We have tons. We have a lot. So we got, right now, our main focus is BBMS. And that's our main claims processing application that we use. Prior to that, we were using BDN, then we switched to VetsNet, Share, and then now BBMS. And a lot of people know that appeals, we have vehicles, the hospital has Capri. There's so many systems that we have to jump onto to work our cases.
You have what? I mean, it's like a dozen isn't too many, right?
It's a lot. It's a lot of cases.
How crazy is that? And now you're going to have all the mail being electronic. So now you throw all that in there. So that's great. You know, there won't be a lot of shredding of records. But gosh, you know, at least you could see it piling up in a bin.
Yeah.
Now it's all loitering in a folder online that you have to actually click on to look at it. Do you see any safeguards being built in on this?
Right now, I don't see any safeguard because the only way there's a safeguard is if a veteran service representative, a person like me who's processing the claim, stumbles across a piece of paper inside another veteran's folder and says, hey, this doesn't belong here. I can associate it with the correct veteran. You know, that's easy. It's great. If it's associated with another veteran's record. Now, if it's not and it's in this unassociated mail bin or at a different portal in a different state somewhere, and that's an issue. You know, you're not going to be able to know if this document actually came in or not until the veteran tells us, hey, I sent this to you. Why didn't you get it yet? You know, and we can't call the scan station and say, hey, did you guys get this? Nah, we don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, because they don't know. There's no, I mean, it's just piles of paper being scanned. When they scan it in, do they scan it in by what center it's supposed to go to, or?
Well, it depends on where the veteran lives. So it goes into these portals. So let's say they send it to Philadelphia, and it goes into the Philadelphia portal. And now the people who's processing these documents to put into the correct record will jump into this portal, grab that mail, and put it in the right record. Now, if a veteran lives in, let's say California.
Okay.
And we don't know about it, and the veteran sends in the piece of paper, it goes to a different portal. It'll go to a California regional office's portal. We in Philadelphia cannot look into that portal. So it can be sitting there for a good amount of time until somebody in California catches it. So there's a lot of weird loops that's going on with the electronic mail stuff. So, and when we send something to the scan station, it's like, where is it? We don't know. We don't really have a good point of contact when it comes down to that. And I'm just looking at my perspective, though.
Sure. And do you guys have the same problem when, when a claim gets brokered out that you can't see it, but it's still part of your center? Do you guys broker things out there?
Well, when we broker things out and it's already in BBMS, you can look into that veterans folder.
Okay.
We can look into it. Let's say I want to look into a folder and someone from California. I can look at that person's record if it's scanned in there. You know, so that's not a major issue. But when it comes down to incoming mail or incoming records getting associated with the wrong veteran, then that's a bigger issue.
Unbelievable. You can just see how this could so easily train wreck I spoke with a lady. She had worked. It was after we did one of the shows with the Oakland whistleblowers, and a lady called me. She'd been at the Oakland Center for, I don't know, 33 years, I think she said. And she, I don't know exactly her job title, but it sounds like it was, you know, triage, mail, that kind of thing. And she'd been doing that for all those years. And I asked her, I said, you know, do you think that the electronic is going to help? And she said, you know, it was faster when we processed it on paper.
Yes.
she said it was actually faster.
And that's not hard to believe. I mean,
you know, it was sitting right there.
When computers came along, we weren't going to have paper anymore. And I think we use more paper now than we ever used.
You have to print it out now so you can keep track of it, because once it's in the computer, you can't find it again.
Oh, gosh, yes.
All right, we're coming right back. Take a really quick break. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back with Ryan Cease. We're talking about the VA, and we should get a little more of his whistleblower story since that really was our topic.
Teach me, cheat. Show me how you do it. I want to work on the very best. The one who cheats on me. Teach me now. Never better now. Make me a honky-tonk angel. Teach me, cheat.
And I've seen a lot of good folk die. Had a lot of bills to pay. I'd give the shirt right off of my back if I had the guts to say, take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more. My woman done left because all the reasons.
Who knew that there were so many applications for country music in the industry of the Veterans Administration? I particularly like the outgoing song, Teach Me to Cheat. I think we'll be using that one again. Hey, Ryan, you could play those, you know, at your work. I'm sure they'd be really popular.
I'm blasting some country. It's awesome. Philadelphia.
Yeah, I figure since you're in a rock band, you live in Philadelphia, we should inundate you with country music, just for the heck of it.
I sort of listen to country. It's pretty cool.
It is. It's some of these older ones, you know, Bob's got all these songs. I don't know where he gets them all. Looks them up on this program, and it's stuff that, I don't know, you just never thought about the application before. So where do you see things going for you? Kristen mentioned to us at near the end of the hour that she doesn't feel like it's probably a very smart career move to switch positions within the VA. Because then it just gives them a reason to line her up to fail or points or whatever. Do you kind of see the same thing for you?
I mean, that's the thing about it. It was the risk that we were willing to take, you know, to do the right thing. And a lot of people believe that, hey, when you whistleblow in the VA, you'll get paid if you do something right, you know, if you find something. I'm like, no. It's not about the money. We don't get paid. We did it based on because we knew there was something wrong. We needed to fix it. And now, both Kristen and I, our career is basically screwed. Sorry.
No, we could say screwed. We could say crap, too, just for reference.
Yeah. So,
but if you're a VA employee, I mean, now that's a federal job, correct?
Yes.
All right, so can't you transfer laterally into another federal agency, or are they just like radar up?
How do you think that'll work?
Yeah,
it's going to be really tough because you know how it is with these government facilities. They'll do background checks on you. I'm like, hey, I can see you in Google. What did you do over there?
They'll be like, oh my God, we're going to get Ryan. He's going to come clean up our outfit. That's going to be great.
We need somebody like Ryan.
Exactly. That's what we want to do.
We're stuck.
Yeah, that so probably ain't going to work.
Yeah, you're trapped.
Unless there's like some sort of, hey, let's have a deal here. Where do you want to go? I want to go here. And okay, fine. We'll have an agreement that you're going to be transferred. But if we were on our own to, let's say, a request for a job, 9 out of 10, they're going to do a background check and see us all over Google saying that we're whistleblowers.
Yeah, I'd say before you take that transfer, you make sure you put a line in there where they can't get rid of you for at least 10 years.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it is
It could be cold in Anchorage without a job.
It's true. There was a guy that worked for Kubota Tractor or one of the dealerships, and he used to call it that doing certain things, those were CLMs. I think this is a, I think being a whistleblower is a CLM, a career limiting move.
That's what we did.
You made the ultimate CLM, huh?
Yeah. But, well, aside, I mean, if anything, we risked our jobs and we basically messed up our careers from here on then. But you know what? Throughout all this, we hope that there's a major change that occurs from this, regardless. So right now, we took a hit, you know, for veterans, taxpayers, and employees. So that's why we're pushing really, really hard for these changes to be implemented.
And it counts. And I know there's a lot of veterans out there that are counting on folks like you to do the right thing. And it's really hard to ask somebody to do the right thing and end up messing up their career over it. But somebody's
going
to do
it. But how
do
you not do it?
Somebody's,
at the,
I mean,
at
yeah,
the end of the day, how do
yourself?
You not do it? You got to go there every day and you know, be asked to do things that you know are either against the law or going to hurt veterans. Or follow. I really like the people that are tagged to go, here, I want you to go follow your coworker around and rat on them.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's got to be great. That's another terrific opportunity you've missed.
Yeah, you put that on your resume.
I was your favorite. It does that, yeah.
Yeah, I was a follower. Lovely.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. You know, well, one day, you know that these things never last forever, and evil never really wins, so the tide will ultimately turn, and I would hope at some point in time a few heads roll, and then, you know, we only have, what, year and better, and if all the voters do a good job, maybe we get a different kind of administration in there, and then we see changes happen pretty quickly because it all rolls down from the presidency. So different secretary, different mindset, more pro-veteran, you know, it'll still be government, so it'll probably happen kind of slow, but how quick, Ryan, like if they fired the director of your facility, say, and a couple of the other managers, if they actually fired those people and made a big example out of them, what's your guess? I mean, obviously we're all totally just speculating, but how quick would change come?
It'll change a lot of things, actually, because now if you terminate them, people that's coming in have a different mindset. You know, and they'll see, oh, man, you guys got rid of these because you got whistleblowers under you. They're going to watch their step. I might be wrong, you know.
No, I don't think you are. I think anytime there's accountability, people have to respect that. And if they want to do a job and they want to stay on that career path, if they're made to be accountable, they'll do the right thing.
Right.
I think that would make a difference.
I think it would, too. It's kind of exciting to think that it would happen. And you know what? Everybody who's doing what you and Kristen are doing and Rusty and the other folks in other facilities, the more you guys pile on with this and the more we make sure we keep it in the public eye, you know, not just healthcare, but benefits and the duplicate payments and all these different things, if we keep that on the front burner, it's much more likely that something will happen, something good.
Yes. And that's what we're always hoping for.
Absolutely. So in our last, 30 seconds or so, got a parting shot you'd like to fire?
All I got to say is thank you very much for having me. It's awesome. All I'm saying is to all the American people out there, just don't feel as if every employee in the VA is bad people. There's a lot of good workers, and we're doing our best to help. But thing is, there are people there that we need to put out in the open.
Exactly, which is going to be part of the good job that you do. So thank you very much for your service, for openers, and thanks for coming on with us. I'm sure we'll do
definitely.
It again.
Thanks for being on, Ryan.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks. Have a great rest of your weekend, which is pretty slim now. I've got a few hours left. All right, everybody, we'll be back next week. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.